Next kina, kina 17, can be found on page 111. We speak about a kina that, as everybody knows, anytime there's a tragedy, there's always some garbage that goes with it. Anytime, unfortunately, there's a war, we hear about looting, raping. It always is a package deal. When there's chaos, it's all the way. It's not just bullets that kill people, it's lives that are ruined. I think I heard from one of my rebbes, I forgot who, that if Hitler killed 6 million, he ruined another 5 million lives as well. For those that lived after the Holocaust to continue living is absolutely an amazing, amazing trait, to continue to think you can actually live. This particular kina speaks about the garbage that goes along with any war. Zechor asher asa b'finim. Remember what the enemy has done in your holiest place in the temple. This kina speaks about a famous story in the Gemara in Gittin, page 57b. As you well know, on Tisha B'Av, one of the things we're not allowed to do is to learn Torah. We're only allowed to learn those parts of the Torah that are actually mournful parts of the Torah. Like these stories in Tractate Gittin that speaks about the various things that happened on the eve of the destruction of the temple. When I say eve, I don't mean the day of. I don't mean Erev Tisha B'Av. I mean all the years prior to the destruction of the temple. And as you all know, not only can we learn that, but according to Rav Soloveitchik, in a brand new book that came out just recently called The Ways of the Lords Are Righteous, it's amazing, Rav Soloveitchik got it in 1993. So you may ask the question, how did the book come out recently? Since Rav Soloveitchik died from his grave, he's been writing endless books. It's an amazing thing. They're putting out all his writings, all his manuscripts, all his teachings. On Tisha B'Av, he would start davening at 8 o'clock in the morning. You saw davening doesn't take that long, about 45 minutes, Torah of Torah. Then he would begin with a class for about an hour on the standard parts of Tisha B'Av, the parts of the Torah that you're allowed to learn. After that hour, he would sit down at about a quarter to 10 o'clock, and begin to say keynote, one by one. And he would stop and explain and stop and explain, and he'd give massively amazing interpretations. You know when they finished davening? 5 o'clock in the afternoon. That's how long he did. He was the one and only person I know that said keynote for so long. That's what he used to do on Tisha B'Av. And he used to even say, what other day of the year can I do this? Can I sit around and just learn and just talk, not eat, nothing? So Rav Soloveitchik, in this new book, explains that learning Torah on Tisha B'Av is not an option. It's not that you're allowed to learn these things if you really want to. Meaning if you're dying, you need to learn Torah, then you can learn those aspects of the Torah. Rather, it's an obligation. Because the temple and destruction is so far from us, we need to get into the mindset. So we better learn those parts of the Torah. It's an obligation. It's a fulfillment of Tisha B'Av to learn those parts of the Torah. And maybe that's why the keynote keep on sending us back to that Gemara and this Medrash, simply because it's an obligation to learn those things on Tisha B'Av. Because if we don't, the temple is as far from us as, if I can use a paraphrase it, and excuse me, Meir Tzidkenu is right now on the moon dancing with a peach of kosher cheese in his mouth. Ultimately, the Gemara in Gittin, page 57b, speaks about what this terrible person did in the temple. Who is this terrible person? Anyone know? Now we're not talking about the first temple, we're talking about the second temple. The destroyer of the first temple was Babylonia, led by who? Nebuchadnezzar. I always say that name to my son, I always say laugh first, because he's going to laugh after a heezer. The second temple was destroyed by the Romans, led by Titus. Titus goes into the temple, goes into the holies of holies. Now just to get our bearings straight, who goes into the holies of holies? The Kohen Gadol, the Grand Kohen. Only him. When does he go in? Only on Yom Kippur. Once a year. Titus comes into Jerusalem, destroys it. As soon as he comes in to Jerusalem, he decides to do something very interesting. Titus went right in there. He's a non-Jew. He's a non-Kohen. He goes right in there. And what does he do? He takes down the parochet, the cover. The cover we took off, but takes down the cover. Puts it on the floor. Calls in a prostitute. And has relations with her in the holies of holies. He took that sword of his. He put it in the parochet, in the covering of the temple. And it says in the Gemara that when he put it in, what came out? Blood. Blood came out. According to the Gemara, it's avenging the murder of that Kohen and Navi that were killed on Yom Kippur in the temple. Now I always ask myself, Titus was not just destroying the temple. Titus was capturing that whole area. He was the world empire at the time. He was like the Turkish Empire of the 1700s, 1800s, 1900s, until World War I. He had time in the middle of the war to take a prostitute, Dafka, go into the holies of holies, take down the parochia, take down the covering, and do this? In the middle of the war, as we say in Yiddish, mitarein, in the middle of all the ruckus, he's capturing, they're asking him, where should we attack, where should we go? They're shooting over there. He has time to go into the temple, go into the holies of holies, take down the holy parochia, and have relations. That's like if there was an epidemic here in the city, and our anti-Semites wanted to destroy the Jewish people. And they're going house to house. They're trying to find, are you Jewish? Yes, we'll put a bullet in your head. And in the middle of it all, they come to the shul, they destroy the shul. But the commander of this force makes it his business in the middle of it all to waste 10 minutes, 15 minutes, take down that covering, put it on the floor of the shul, and have relations with the prostitute. This guy abnormal? It's abnormal. You're right. But here's a little different. What was it? So Mark is suggesting, just like in World War II, they used the trains for the Jews to bring them to Auschwitz, as opposed to using it for the war effort, the same thing here. Instead of fighting against what you need to fight, you go ahead and you waste your time on your hatred of the Jewish people. Could be. I'm going to suggest something else. And I always wondered about what the definition of evil is. We always speak about evil people. Hitler was evil, Haman was evil, Paro was evil. All these people are very evil. Well, what's evil mean? In my opinion, the definition of evil means non-Jews that know what's holy to the Jewish nation and go ahead and defile just that. They know where it hurts us most. I heard this from Rabbi Weinrib, the executive vice president of the OU. And he showed that on Hanukkah especially, they had nothing better to do but to go into the temple and to ruin it. You have many inner enemies, many of them. Why do you think biblical criticism came on the horizon? Biblical criticism came onto the horizon because they took our holiest book, the book of Vayikra, the book that speaks about the sacrifices, and decided to hurt us with just that by suggesting that it was written by a different author that they claim is the priestly cult. It's not going back to Sinai, it's rather more contemporary. They picked on this according to many, since it's our holiest book. Traditionally, little kids, when they got to Cheder at age 3 or 4, they began to look at the book of Vayikra, and they knew exactly where to get us. This book, Vayikra, is very alien from us because we don't no longer bring sacrifices. But what's interesting is that this continues today. There was a great Rebbe that lived after the Holocaust. He lost his entire family in the Holocaust. He resuscitated it. Today, his court sits in Netanya. He has a hospital called the Laniado Hospital. He came to America after the war. I even have a picture of him coming off the boat. And he once said the following statement. Imagine a man comes from Mars, lands on Earth, and wants to know what's going on here. He wants to know what the Earthlings are doing. And after looking at CNN, the New York Times, the Washington Post, he'd come up with the following illusion. You'd think there's a few million Jews in the world picking on a few Nebuch Gentiles. That's what's being portrayed. Little does he know, it's right the opposite. Unfortunately today, with all the world's problems, every single news report, if it's on BBC or CNN, they always have to have a segment about Israel. Why would you care about a small little state in the Middle East? Does any of us shed an eyelash at what's happening in Zimbabwe today? Or what's happening in Australia today? But that little state Israel, unfortunately, the whole world is into. Because if you get evil, they take us exactly where it hurts. And we all know how much it hurts when we hear a bad report about Israel. Ultimately, Titus comes into the temple after it was destroyed, after the Jews are exiled. Roman historians account the many places he captured, from Syria to Libya. So he finally beat Jerusalem, a small little place. And what does he do? He has nothing better to do. But after conquering Jerusalem, he goes into the temple. He sticks his sword into the covering that covered up the entrance to the Holies of Holies, where the Holy Ark was. And in the Holy Ark, everybody knows what was in there? The tablets that were written by God, the broken tablets and the new tablets. And he comes in there, he sticks his knife into the cover, like to the door, and blood comes out. And he thinks he killed God. So what does he do? He takes down the cover. It's like taking down the cover of our parochet on our ark, puts it down on the floor, calls in a prostitute, and in the holies of holies, has sexual relations with her. He has nothing better to do at that point. He's about to capture from Syria to Libya, but he wanted to get us where it would hurt. He knew physical lives hurt to an extent. Spiritual lives hurt to an extent. But ultimately, he got us exactly where it hurts. In the holies of holies. He takes down the parochet, he puts it on the floor, uses it as a blanket, and has sexual relations with a prostitute. That's the definition of evil, according to this kina. He has nothing better to do but to get us exactly in the holiest place that we can think of. They didn't say it Bereshit, which has many contradictions. They have to go to Vayikra, because that's going to get us. And this will explain to you Arafat. You remember Arafat? He's in another world now. I don't think the better world. He's in another world. Arafat, every speech he made, and he wasn't a great orator, but every speech he made, he kept on saying, El Quds, El Quds, El Quds. What's El Quds? Jerusalem. Why would an Arab want Jerusalem? Because we want it. Look in the Quran. What is the holiest city? Mecca. What's the second holiest city? Medina. Then comes Jerusalem. So the Arabs are going crazy about Jerusalem. I never heard the Arabs saying, Mecca, 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 let's go to Mecca, let's go to Mecca for Yantif. No, they want Jerusalem because they know that's where it's going to hurt us the most. And it doesn't make a difference that Arafat was getting Gaza and he never said in his speech, thank God I got Gaza. No, he said, I got Gaza, but I'm going to get El Quds. He knew exactly where to hurt us. He knew where to poke those very swords. And it's amazing how our enemies sometimes know exactly how to hurt us. You think Arafat had nothing better to do than to disclaim our right to the Temple Mount? You think the Palestinian Authority has no better problems but to fight against Israel right now, with the hunger that's going on there, with the corruption that's going on there, with the millions they're getting? They have nothing better to speak about instead of speaking about, let's say, how they're going to resuscitate life, how they're going to create jobs, how they're going to totally abolish unemployment. They go out and speak about how we want Jerusalem, how the disengagement plan doesn't make a difference to us. They get us where it hurts. Take a typical college professor and ask him today, who does the Temple Mount belong to? What do you think he's going to say? What do you think he's going to say? To the Muslims. But what do you think it's called, the Temple Mount? Because of our temple that was destroyed today. So they're very successful in getting us where it hurts. Centuries later, Hitler, just like Titus, of the 6 million that he killed in 6 years, and the millions of lives that he ruined, what did he go after and what was he concerned with? With what he called the Talmudische Yidden. I.A. Eggert, who is their administrator of the general government, just like we have in Canada, Lahavdil, they had basically lieutenant governors in every little province in the areas that they captured. So a governor in every little province was obviously governed by the governor of all governors, and the administrator or the chief of staff was a guy named Eggert. And he writes the following on a document that he drafted on November 23rd, 1940, in Krakow in a castle. Anyone that's been to Krakow, I haven't been there, but I saw pictures of this castle. And he writes the following, and I read word for word now. In response to a memo dated October 25th, 1940, this is our response. Some governors wanted to let the Jews leave for monetary reasons. Interpretation, they'll pay us off and we'll let them leave the country. This is around 1940, so basically before the death camps. In the case of allowing Jews to escape from these districts, there are certain ways for them to live. But if you're going to let the Eastern Jews to escape, be careful. Since for them it signifies a spiritual rejuvenation somewhere else. The Eastern Jews, due to their orthodoxy, represent the biggest percent of rabbis and Talmud teachers and have links in the USA. And therefore, if you let these, in his words, Talmud Shayidim, Talmud Jews, namely the rabbis, if you let them go, they will cause a spiritual renewal in its masses. I.A. Eggert understood what hurts us the most. If he gets our rabbis, if he gets our Torah scrolls, that's going to kill us. He kills a Jew, there were Jews being killed every day, it hurts, but he knows where to get us. Imagine what he's saying. He understood that Jews understand that a world is ruined and a world is rebuilt. And he understood if you let the rabbis out, we'll never get our target. Within the 6 million Jews that they killed, the millions that they tried to kill, amongst them people sitting with us today, he had nothing better to go after but the Talmud teachers, but the rabbis. Titus succeeded by having a whore sleep with him in the holies of holies to teach the world that the best strategic war is to get us in our most holiest places. And I'll just end before we say the kina with a story, a true story. My sister was in Poland for a trip with her school. And they were walking around the marketplace in between a death camp to a death camp. And in the marketplace, they're walking a big open marketplace, there's an antique shop. And they go in, there's various antiques, and she looks closely and she sees, it looks like a scroll. She goes, she sees a ripped Torah scroll. She asked the guy, where did you get this? Whatever, it's an antique, he got it. So they collected the money between them and they got the scrolls, all the scrolls he had, because he had a bunch of ripped scrolls, and they brought it back to Israel. I always ask myself, why did Hitler go into the shuls and rip the scrolls? If you want to set the shul on fire, and the Torah scrolls are set on fire, that's one thing. But to actually make the effort to go in, before you go and burn the shul down, before you bulldoze it to the ground, before you raise it, you go into the ark and you rip the Torah scrolls. He knew exactly where to get it. When I told this story to the kids at the Hebrew school here, they were absolutely astounded. You could hear a pin drop in the room. I told the story, and you can hear a pin drop. When I spoke to them about Moses said to God, believe me, you heard everything but a pin drop. When I said Shabbos, Yontif, Kashrus, when I told that story, there wasn't a dry eye in the room, simply because they know where to get us. They went in, and they dafka ripped that scroll. Titus goes into the holy temple, and dafka, in the middle of the war, when the tanks are shooting the shells, he goes in, and he has relations in the holies of holies, because he knew sticks and stones can break our bones, but taking our holiest thing will kill us. Let's say this kina together.
חילו לממשת, יפותם נתנו למשיב בשן, ובת כל נשמע רוחה, למה תישן?
We end this kina by saying, God, please do not sleep, please do not slumber, as people try to get us where it hurts. And indeed, I thank Rabbi Weinrib from the OU for sharing this document with the Jewish world last year.